New Zealand, whether you're strolling along her crystal blue coastlines or hiking up her snow-covered peaks, it is paradise on earth. If that wasn't enough, New Zealand ranks as one of the best places in the world for wealth, health, and happiness. This is heaven on earth. So why is everyone desperate to leave?
People are leaving the country in record numbers.
It's the highest ever recorded for an annual period.
Unemployment's rising, it's getting hard to find jobs out there.
It's going to be hard for all of us to find a place that kind of help us grow as people.
We're seeing the same thing happening all across the West. For the first time in history, people are desperately leaving paradise. From South Korea to California and the UK to New Zealand, it's a global movement. And just stop for a moment. Think about how many of your friends, family, and the people you know that are thinking of leaving or have already left. How many times do you catch yourself in dismay at where your country and where your city is going? Do you ever think about how much more fulfilled, happier, and connected you'd be if you maybe just left it all behind? Wherever I go in the West, I look around and I'm really shocked at what's going on. And it led me to think, why is this happening everywhere? Why is this happening all at once? And why is this happening now? The problem just gets so much worse the more you look at those questions, as these aren't just any people leaving. They're often our best and brightest. The majority of people leaving are young, working adults. The generation that drives economic growth is losing hope and checking out. If you ask a politician why this is happening, you would get a lot of different answers. Recently, New Zealand's Prime Minister Chris Luxon was asked why people should stay in his country.
In the future, if I work hard, I can get ahead. I can move around my country feeling safe. I can actually get a great education for my kids. Parents can get healthcare. So that's what we've got
to do. If you work hard, you can get ahead. People want to feel safe, get a good education, and get healthcare. These are the reasons he highlights for young people to stay. But people naturally disagree with this. People working good jobs simply don't have enough to live anymore. New Zealanders have been charged so much for groceries, the supermarkets are now facing charges over alleged price gouging, along with other predatory practices. Meanwhile, regular people working pay the costs and see none of the returns ever. In lots of ways, they're the lucky ones. Especially for young people, unemployment has been rising in New Zealand. Some people have been forced to leave because they simply cannot find a good job in their home country.
It wasn't our first option to leave New Zealand, and it's been really challenging to try to find a job. And he received a few offers from Australia, so we just had to, you know, do what is right for our family.
But before we continue, something crazy is happening on the 2nd of December. You see, Agent Opus is running a live experiment where an AI editor will go head-to-head with real human creators. They'll have the same brief and the same amount of time, where 60 seconds of video has to be made from scratch in 1 hour. And you get to watch the whole thing unfold live, including the mistakes, where they'll be judged by editors like Hayden Hillier-Smith. It's going to be interesting because, for context, the kind of video Agent Opus can generate in about an hour would normally take a human editor 6 to 8 hours minimum, when you include all the cutting, pacing, and motion graphics. And yes, the AI motion graphics will be a big part of this. The titles, the transitions, the visual beats that would usually slow everything down just happen automatically. They'll be running multiple matchups. One of the edits will be a commentary video breaking down Coca-Cola using AI in their ads. The other will be a clean explainer on the history of Santa Claus. These videos are two totally different stars with the same constraints. Everything will then be judged on technical quality, creativity, and storytelling. So it's not just about speed, it's about whether the output actually holds up, and whether AI editing agents can match up to teams of professional editors. Editors like Daniel Patel and Sebastian Jeffries and his editor. There's also a contest running alongside this event where you can pick who you think's going to win, human or AI. If you're right, you can win rewards and early access. And if nothing else, you get a front row seat to see where this stuff is genuinely at right now, rather than just where people claim it is. So if you want to watch it live or take part in the contest, go to the link in the description below. Because even if you are skeptical about AI editing, this is one of those moments where it's worth seeing the comparison play out in real time. For others, it's the cost of housing that's pushed them over the edge. While rents have fallen recently, thanks in large part to the exodus, wages still have a lot of catching up to do. This is often the problem. Price hikes for groceries, bills, and everything else haven't been met by rising wages. So when the cost of living skyrockets, people get less out of life. And in 2024, wages grew by less than half of inflation in New Zealand. Like most in the West, the country's population is also aging rapidly, with fertility rates at 1.58 births per woman, well below below the replacement rates. They, like every other Western country, have used immigration to mask their own challenges, but this isn't holding up and doesn't incentivize young people born in the country to even stay. Last year, 30,000 more people left New Zealand for Australia than came back. It's the biggest loss in over a decade, and most were under 30. Young professionals, skilled workers, nurses with a decade of experience who couldn't land a job at home. There are now 600,000 New Zealand-born people living in Australia, with wages around 33% higher on average and sometimes double what they are at home. Meaning moving across the sea is just a no-brainer for those who can afford it. But don't get me wrong, Australia has its own housing crisis and cost of living problems, as we've spoken about before. But the wages there do broadly keep up, though this will likely change if people keep arriving from overseas. So right now, it might be among the last Western countries where you can climb the ladder without being a genius entrepreneur or having family money. How long that lasts is yet another question. So you do get the sense that something bigger is missing in modern Western life. It feels like society is grossly failing to meet our expectations. People just don't feel fulfilled, and our modern consumerist lives can't fill that gap. Politicians might point to this emptiness, but they can never offer a real concrete solution, because New Zealand is far from alone here. Last year, over 500,000 Brits left the UK. Nearly 40% of young professionals aged 25 to 34 are actively planning to leave in the next 5 years. IT workers, healthcare workers, teachers, these are the people who make a country function, who create the culture to begin with. Some head to Dubai for tax-free salaries and consumerist luxury, where wealth is the culture and authoritarian safety keeps the streets clean. Dubai has 250,000 Brits now, rising sharply over the past decade. If you're wealthy, Dubai is a consumerist paradise. Luxury villas, pools, it's an adult playground. There is no political wokeness, no cancel culture, no high taxes, just easy living in a barren desert, where all of your desires will be catered to regardless of law, unless you're one of the millions of migrant workers who built the place. But the question is, why leave the beautiful UK for that? The UK, like so many others in the West, has become an extractive society. Money funneled to London and the elites who buy more assets and increase control while taxing the rest. The damage of this is visible everywhere. Proud buildings and prosperous neighborhoods sucked dry and left to rot. Beautiful old towns completely abandoned. Churches sold to the rich, while the community is completely destroyed. High rents and less disposable income have killed British towns and villages. You walk around and it's just people loitering in Turkish barbershops. And the US is starting to see the same thing. Californians are leaving in record numbers, some to Texas, but others to Mexico. You walk through any of Mexico City's expat neighborhoods and it looks like what LA pretends to be. Clean, sunny streets, walkable, and with a real sense of community. And of course, everything else is a fraction of the cost. The prices in Condesa or Roma Norte are cheaper than equivalent areas in the US, though obviously much more expensive than the poorer parts of the city. The streets are clean and sunny with trees lining the sidewalks. Everything is walkable and crime is somehow pretty low in these areas. The biggest difference though is really in the community itself. The atmosphere in these neighborhoods is just different. People are lively, happier, and willing to actually talk to each other. Just living and working in the same neighborhood instead of commuting an hour each way is a massive improvement on Western life already. There are independent coffee shops and restaurants everywhere, at just seemingly normal prices. And these are all signs that there's a thriving local economy. Real neighborhood businesses run by real people, and it gives the area life, making it feel like an actual community rather than just a collection of isolated units, an endless suburban sprawl. Of course, the Westerners who move to places like this are often just living in a bubble to some extent, leveraging their Western salaries, whether through remote work or savings, to afford a higher quality of life than they could back home. But that's exactly the point. You're getting a better deal, a better quality of life for the same money or less. You just feel generally happier in life. But here's where this mass exodus from the West gets strange and unexpected. You know the obvious candidates: Australia, Thailand, Mexico, and Canada. But it seems like today, people are more regularly leaving Western countries for Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, Vietnam, and Albania. A Polish think tank recently found that fewer people are heading to the West, and more Western migrants are actually coming into Poland. Videos on Instagram and TikTok show stunningly clean, beautiful, modern, and cosmopolitan cities full of vibrancy. And similar to Mexico to the US, the culture seems alive when at home it's dying. 20 years ago, suggesting that someone would leave London for Albania or somewhere like Warsaw or Bucharest would have been insane. Albania was what people were supposed to be fleeing from. Over a third of their population, 1.5 million people, emigrated in 25 years. Poverty, crime, and the Albanian mafia all once colored people's perception of it. Now, Albania is one of the safest countries in Europe. All while the mafia criminals emigrated to the West. And it's the same situation in Croatia, Bulgaria, Lithuania, even recently war-torn countries like Bosnia are safe for most. A one-bedroom flat in Eastern Europe costs 500 euros. In London, at least 1,800 easily. Same quality of life, sometimes much better. You've got better romantic interests, more community, and a general sense of happiness and ease. In South Asia, the difference is even more stark. In Thailand's Chiang Mai, you can live comfortably for well under $1,000 a month and have an amazing lifestyle. It's why we always see these videos of Bangkok's insane skyline on your Instagram or TikTok feed. But it's not all just about affordability and culture. Nearly half of UK expats say their mental health improved within 6 months of leaving. What you realize is that they're not running away, they're just running towards something the West can no longer provide. The calculation has flipped. Countries we look down on are actually outcompeting the West on safety, affordability, community, and quality of life. Clearly, there's something brewing here other than economics. This feels like a symptom of something deeper and more systemic under the surface. Our modern societies, the most advanced economies on the planet, are simply not delivering on expectations. There's a fatal mismatch between what they expected to be and actually are. There's this common theory called Maslow's hierarchy of needs, a pyramid showing what humans need to thrive, not just survive. At the bottom, food, water, shelter. One level up, safety, stable job, healthcare. Next, community, belonging, connection. Above that, respect, achievement, purpose. And at the top, self-actualization, realizing your potential and finding meaning. Western societies in the 70s and 80s were moving up this pyramid, and they often compared themselves to others. One of the core principles of the US was the pursuit to happiness. And of course, Western countries participated in the Renaissance. They industrialized earlier than most, and people from the middle and upper classes grew richer and richer. A postman or truck driver could afford a house on one income, where they felt secure and had time for community and meaning. Marriages were stronger because there was less financial stress. This was the promise we'd all been working for. We'd moved beyond survival and we were meant to thrive. But somewhere down the line, the West started sliding backwards. Self-actualization has transpired to mean working too many hours, having no time for any sense of community, living completely spread out from one another in boxes, and just having no energy for meaning when you become exhausted from surviving, just collapsing in your bed watching reels. Actualizing oneself means waiting forever to get through education and work, and then finally struggling to meet someone to eventually have a family sometime in your late 30s or even your 40s. Your struggle with money and struggle to retire with the possibility of 50-year mortgages. This situation would have been unthinkable not that long ago. You'd have kids at 20, retiring before 60, leaving a good 20 years of relative freedom to enjoy life with a house you've paid off, all whilst living with meaningful connections around you. But Western societies today are failing to deliver the promise they made. We're supposed to be at the top of the pyramid. And that's when you realize the cost of living isn't all about money. It's what you're willing to pay financially, emotionally, psychologically, even spiritually to live in a Western country. That cost-benefit analysis has reached a tipping point. We pay so much and get just less and less out of it. It's a serious case of diminishing returns. People are calculating. I can barely survive. I have no community. I have no purpose. I have no real true friends. Everything's transactional and I have no future. So why am I paying this price, along with heavy taxation? This is simply why young people are just leaving the West altogether. And it's not just one country here, it's every Western society that's heading this way. But some are much more advanced and show us what we're spiraling towards. Take South Korea, where there are massive obstacles for people born poor. You see it in education. Everyone has a right to free education, but tests are so strict and passing grades are so tight that most are locked out of top universities, and therefore the best jobs. The richest can buy in. For everyone else, you need evening classes, the hog one. Regular kids finish school at 4 or 5pm, then have another 4 to 6 hours at night school. Tuition for the best hog ones is incredibly expensive. Lower income families spend nearly as much on private education as on food. You can't afford the top hog one? Well, that's a massive disadvantage and no one's gonna save you. They're also competitive to get into, often relying on a parent to help, booking classes, coaching, sometimes doing homework. And so if both parents are working full-time, that's another massive disadvantage. So the system will give you this illusion of opportunity, but only the luckiest, most connected, and richest kids have a shot. And the prize? A life working long, grueling hours to stay above water. Despite how bad things have gotten in the West, it's not quite as bad as South Korea yet. But for years, South Korean culture has seen moving to the US as the ultimate goal for their children. That was the selling point of the US. You weren't limited by class or background. It's why today, there are 2 million Koreans living in the US. Over half were born elsewhere, many settling in California. And you can see why: the climates, beaches, mountains, and forests just across the Pacific Ocean. But opportunities were what counted underneath the aesthetic. Broadly speaking, you could earn a good living if you put your mind to it, providing you had a strong work ethic. But opportunities were also accessible due to the West's inclusive institutions and open society. With things as they are now though, how much longer will this illusion even last? Koreans are some of the hardest working people in the world, but soon even they will fail to make it in a Western society rigged against them. The West is still living off its reputation, but that reputation is built on a foundation that rotted out decades ago. People arrive expecting the West that they were sold with movies. If it's in the US, it'll be the American dream, the land of opportunity, streets paved with gold. Then they get the reality instead: precarious work, unaffordable housing, social isolation, homeless people everywhere on the streets, and a general apathy in the air with no path upward. And often the only thing propping up lots of high streets is crime. Over in England, just recently, it was uncovered that hundreds of small shops on British high streets were all linked to a single crime network run by Kurdish immigrants. They operated as fronts, selling illegal tobacco and vapes on the side to supplement their income. But here's the irony though: even though the word is getting out, people are still desperate to get to the West. The soft power is ever present. London, California, they still have the glow, the reputation built over decades. You see it everywhere. South Koreans still dream of moving to America.
Yes, sir.
저는 미국에 살아도 좋을 것 같다고 생각은 해요.
People from developing countries in the Commonwealth think that London is the dream. The West's previously deserved reputation, along with its marketing in movies, media, and decades of cultural dominance, still works. But when people arrive today, they're often just shocked by the reality. You move to London thinking it's an amazing opportunity, then suddenly you arrive and it's a hellscape. You're struggling to make rent within 6 months, you can barely afford to live, you're worried about roadmen on the streets, it's dark, gloomy, and nihilistic. The opportunities promised don't materialize. Nobody trusts one another. There's a general sense of fear in the air. The opportunity was a mirage. There is no real culture anymore. Just tons of people from all different parts of the world struggling to make it work, all crammed in one city, making everyone fend for themselves. And yet none of these things truly explain what's even happening. Whether you know it or not, your life is decided by the social contract. You never signed it, but it's always been there. If you follow the law, work, and pay taxes, you're guaranteed certain rights and opportunities. A couple of generations ago, this was real. The Enlightenment idea of the American dream wasn't just a slogan, it was actually a reality. But then around the 80s and 90s, the people who made it to the top pulled the ladder up so many people couldn't climb up so easily. The baby boom then dried up and governments promoted immigration to supply the economy with cheap servant labor. And that actually is another symptom of self-actualization. Everyone's too busy finding themselves to work and contribute to the economy. Lots of people don't have a proper job until they're in their mid-20s. So governments looked at the falling birth rates, the labor shortages, and the lack of young workers, and their solution was simple. Import workers from countries where people still live by the old social contract and pay everyone else less. In chasing this new model, we lost what made our old jobs valuable: sense of place, role in the community, culture, and identity. A carpenter knew who he was, had a function people needed. He would regularly interact with the community, and together that would foster a local culture and a national identity. A postman mattered to his neighborhood, people knew his name, he belonged. But now we're just interchangeable corporate units, numbers in a screen on an algorithm. Today, social media rubs luxury lifestyles in our faces daily. It makes normal jobs seem not good enough. You failed if you're just a teacher or just a nurse. At the same time, people are struggling so much that a peaceful life with those jobs is incredibly enviable. Most would love to contribute in their own small way and get rewarded for it, have a house, not stress about money, and see their kids. Instead, we're expected to be hyper-competitive, always clawing up to the top, pulling all-nighters for corporate margins we'll never benefit from, all for wages far lower than our parents earned. Choosing to be a nurse or a teacher in cities like London is just like signing up to a deal to be poor for the sake of contributing to a society. And you can see how messed up that is, especially if you don't feel any connection to that society in the first place. But if we pull back the layers, we can see exactly how they restructured society to make this happen. Just look at the top universities. In 2025, Berkeley had an 11% acceptance rate. In 1973, 40%. Other top universities are the same. They've gotten larger and richer, but admission numbers haven't kept pace, as the supply has been artificially constrained by people in control. It is better if there's less degrees going around, as then the value of those degrees look better with fewer graduates. Colleges then look more prestigious with restrictive intake. But most of all, it prevents too many people from getting into upper levels of society and disrupting the status quo. The same extractive pattern spread to housing. Once enough people owned homes, they had a vested interest in keeping prices high. Building more houses would increase supply, which would lower prices and hurt their property values. So older homeowners, who vote far more reliably than younger renters, started fighting against new construction. Politicians responded by creating more and more restrictions on building. Zoning laws got stricter, planning permission became harder to get, development ground to a halt in places where people wanted to live. On the ground level, you saw NIMBYism everywhere. UK pensioners protested against a development that would have added thousands of desperately needed homes to their area. What were they protecting? An empty field. The real reason? Each new house might slightly lower their property values. And when over 56% of the UK housing is owned by people over 60, they have enormous political power to protect their wealth. So the results are predictable. Rents skyrocketed because supply just couldn't keep up with demand, especially with rising mass immigration. Young people would then be entirely priced out of the housing market, having no real opportunity to buy homes like their parents did. On a wider scale, even more red tape was created. Old people vote more than young people, so politicians cater to their demands, however destructive this could be long term. It's all part of a process that Bourdieu called Utopia of Endless Exploitation, where he argued the current path in society right now is designed to destroy collective structures for the sake of pure market logic, creating what he called the absolute reign of flexibility. Fixed-term contracts instead of stable jobs, constant competition within companies, even within teams. The workplace is full of self-monitoring and self-exploitation disguised as autonomy. You're told you're your own boss and that you have freedom, but you're just exploiting yourself more efficiently. He said, in this way, a Darwinian world emerges. It is the struggle of all against all at all levels of the hierarchy, which finds support through everyone clinging to their job and organization under conditions of insecurity, suffering, and stress. That means governments and companies, often working in tandem, progressively dismantle where community could happen. Third places, cafes, libraries, community centers, corner pubs, nice downtown areas, barbershops even, where you'd run into neighbors, are just disappearing completely. In America, we see it specifically with even public transport being completely wiped away in favor of giant freeways, where you just commute every single day, going from your house to work, and nothing else. All in the pursuit of a more efficient economic model. But these spaces were critical. They buffered stress, loneliness, and alienation. And when they disappear, everything worsens. Isolation, crime, addiction, and cultural polarization. This is the deeper issue. We might scrape out a living, but anything else is just a fantasy. And when it comes to what people need to feel human, most people don't have access to that like they once did. And for those hellbent on making a living in this system, you'll often have to move to the big city. How many people do you know who did that? And how many of them got burned out? How many do you think secretly don't enjoy it, even if they don't admit it, to save face and prevent themselves from breaking down? The city is where success is made, right? Or really, is that something you need to do to survive, because there's no choice? Maybe you hate the idea of just being one in millions living in a city. And what does it look like when you get there? drag yourself out of bed, commute, slave at corporate tasks from an algorithm, your colleagues are there for the exact same reasons, you all know you could be replaced, there's no real connection, and you all have to stifle your own real authentic selves. When it's done, you're completely burnt out, repressed, with no time or energy for anything but eating and chores. Then vegging out to some doom scrolling, trying not to think about tomorrow or the day after that. Or if you work at home, there comes the motivation-sapping isolation, the loneliness, the grueling lack of social contact that makes you feel less secure. Like everything great is happening somewhere else in the city and you're not invited. See, where is the reward here? Where's the progression when so many of us are living like this? You don't see the actual rewards for your work and it destroys people's sense of self. It's only visible in consumerist life. Struggling just to go from cheap instant coffee to expensive lattes, from cheap fast fashion to expensive designer fast fashion made in the same factory. Maybe a slightly better TV to collapse in front of, but there is just no goal past that. So is it really any surprise that people are rejecting this destroyed social contract and moving away, often taking much bigger risks than they once did? Most people don't even want to do this, even if they do end up enjoying it. I mean, do you really want to leave your friends and family permanently? Do you really want to live somewhere all the way across the world, in a completely different culture and language? Well, when your society becomes so extractive and the social contract is so broken, sometimes it is just the only option. And it's a much better option than just staying where you are. And I mean, if you're going to be happier somewhere else, then it's probably worth doing. It's probably the necessary sacrifice needed. It is just why so many of us are leaving the West at this point. But at this point, you might wonder what you could actually do in this situation. As we all know, we're getting a bad deal in the West. Globalization and technology have damaged society, of course. Your job might have been outsourced or your community fell apart under the pressure of change. But history tells us tides always change. First the Great Depression, then the New Deal. Governments of New Zealand, the UK and everywhere in the West might not have realized this yet, but they will soon. And it's now your choice where you end up. Most will be unwilling to move, you might want to stick close to family or weather the storm wherever you are. But don't forget that there are other burgeoning opportunities elsewhere, and other societies might actually appreciate and reward your work more. It might just be worth the risk, and to reset your mind at least for a few years. Because once you leave the West, you finally get true perspective on how life can be lived.